Headlines this hour, a major Iraqi political alliance member expresses concern that the U.S. is trying to manipulate vote results in Iraq. The U.S. Treasury Department reports a budget deficit of $221 billion, the highest in 17 months. The European Parliament backs the findings of a UN investigator that highlights Israeli war crimes in Gaza. It is 0100 GMT and 3:30 AM here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Welcome to this edition of Press TV's World News. Well, Iraq's National Alliance has expressed concern over the process of vote counting in the country's parliamentary elections. A candidate from the alliance told Press TV that there are fears about U.S. intervention.
The concern we have, the concern is how those ballots from each voting center is going to be processed in the computer center inside the higher electoral commission. The reason we are insisting on this issue, because we are afraid there's some sort of an American intervention inside the Electoral Commission in processing these numbers and maybe altering these numbers, because we're not very much sure about how the program of these computers is working. We're not going to accept any election results without putting these ballots out to prove that these ballots has been processed and entered in the computer system in a proper way.
Well, new details from Iraq show the premier's political bloc, the State of Law Alliance, is the front runner in the general elections. According to informal tallies from 85% of the votes, Nouri al-Maliki's coalition is narrowly ahead in at least 10 of Iraq's 18 provinces, including Baghdad. Reports say Maliki's list looks like it is heading for control of almost one-third of the 325-seat parliament. Initial results are expected to be released by Thursday. Iraq's Electoral Commission said earlier over 62% of eligible voters participated in Sunday's parliamentary elections. On to the United States now, where that country has recorded its highest budget deficit in 17 months in February. The Treasury Department reported a budget deficit of $221 billion. February receipts totaled over $107 billion. The figure shows a 23% increase over last February's total. It also marks the first monthly year-over-year increase since April of 2008. Outlays were up 17% year-over-year, reaching $328 billion last month. Well, for more on the U.S. budget deficit, we're now joined by Edward Nell, who is professor of economics at New School University, who is joining us on the line from New York. Professor, it's good to have you with us now. The U.S. is entering unfamiliar territory in its level of public debt, which will be larger over the next 10 years than it's been in half a century. Is there no choice, then, on whether to change course from the current policy?
Well, I think the biggest problem is not that the deficit is too big. It's that given the state of unemployment, which is higher than it has been since the 1930s, this budget deficit could be looked at in some respects as too small. What we need right now is a lot of help by the federal government to the states and the cities, which are under great pressure. They are experiencing a shortfall of revenues. That's where the really serious problem is, because states and cities generally don't have the luxury of running deficits. They have to cut employees, and that means they will be adding to a level of unemployment which is already higher than it has been since the very worst of the 1930s depression.
Right now, Professor Timothy Geithner said the deficit, while, and I'm paraphrasing him now, unsustainably rather high, is helping the recovery. What you're seeing is a high level of confidence among foreign investors in our economy and a willingness of Americans to provide the financing needed. Is he right on that?
Well, I don't think that a high level of confidence among foreigners and foreign investors is really what the problem is. We sometimes hear that China is financing the United States. That's kind of a silly way to interpret what's actually happening. China is selling a great deal of goods and services to the United States and is accepting dollars in return, which they are holding as foreign exchange reserves. And they need to hold those reserves because the rules of the international game require that large trading nations have large reserves. And they hold them in dollars, which means that they take the actual money, which earns no interest, which they have been paid, and buy treasury bonds with it. So they're swapping a no-yield asset for an asset that has a low but stable yield. And that's really all that's happening, as long as the dollar is the international currency of choice. And that doesn't look like it's about to change in the middle of a worldwide recession. So I don't think what the foreign investor thinks is particularly important. What's really important is that we need, in the United States, a much stronger stimulus than we have been getting. And the Obama administration took some steps to do that, but they compromised with the Republicans. They didn't get any votes for compromising, but they compromised anyway, and about a third of the stimulus wasn't really worth much. So we have a much smaller stimulus than we should have.
All right, Professor, looking at the larger picture here, how does the U.S. politically and financially come to terms with the fact that despite a budget deficit, aid to Israel now totals $114 billion, while the war spending in Iraq and Afghanistan is also ever-present?
Well, it's crazy to... It isn't even, however, just that we have running up these huge expenditures in the middle of a huge crisis. It's arguable that those expenditures aren't worthwhile anyway. It does not seem to me that the Obama administration has made the kind of steps that it promised, the kind of steps that it started to take tentatively towards changing its policy in the Middle East. They have said that they would do that, and I suppose you can say that a few steps have been taken, but there's a terrible waste of money. A good exercise would be to look back at the costs of the stalemate in the Middle East and ask what would have happened had they made any of the possible deals that have been proposed. Any deal would have meant that both sides could have cut their military spending and could have increased their social and economic spending and put themselves on a path of rapid growth. And after 50 years, consider what growing as these countries could, and to some extent, from time to time, when they've had peace, have grown. They have grown at 6, 7, 8% per year. Suppose you do that for 50 years. That would have been a spectacularly different world that would have resulted from that.
All right, Edward Nell, professor of economics at the New School University, joining us there on the line from New York. Professor, thank you very much for your insight. Well, the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture has criticized the Obama administration for failing to investigate torture allegations made while George W. Bush was in office.
So many other reasons for the Obama administration to really establish a high-level Blue Ribbon Commission or a special investigator with all the investigative powers to really look into the practices. And that means also to declassify still certain documents. So to tell the American public what happened, but also the world. What were major human rights violations committed by the Bush administration, and in my case, of course, what kind of torture methods? Perhaps we don't know everything.
Well, Manfred Novak says the administration should also offer compensation to victims of torture. The U.S. government has been accused of carrying out torture several times since it launched its so-called war on terror. Suspects have claimed they were abducted without legal proceedings and taken to secret CIA prisons for interrogation. The former head of Britain's spy agency says U.S. intelligence agencies had been very keen to conceal their torture of terror suspects. Well, the European Parliament has backed findings of a UN-appointed expert panel chaired by Judge Richard Goldstone over Israeli war on Gaza. The Parliament has urged its 27 member states to monitor the Israeli and Palestinian probes into alleged war crimes committed during Israel's war against Gazans at the turn of last year. Israelis have sharply criticized the move. The so-called Goldstone report slammed Israel for committing war crimes and possible crimes against humanity in Gaza. It proposes that Israeli officials who took part in alleged crimes be prosecuted by the International Criminal Court. Israel's 22-day offensive against Gaza claimed the lives of around 1,400 Palestinians, mostly women and children. Remaining in that region, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden has met with acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank city of Ramallah. Biden's visit aims at launching indirect talks between Palestinians and Israelis with the U.S. mediation, Sari Al-Khalili reports.
During his trip to the West Bank city of Ramallah, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden strongly condemned Israel's recent decision to build 1,600 settlement housing units in East Jerusalem Al-Quds, saying such a move undermines trust in the peace process. At a news conference with acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas, Biden urged both sides to refrain from actions that could inflame tensions. He arrived in the region on Tuesday for a three-day visit in a bid to officially announce resumption of indirect Palestinian-Israeli talks.
Yesterday, the decision by the Israeli government to advance planning for new housing units in East Jerusalem undermines that very trust. The trust that we need right now in order to begin as well as produce have profitable negotiations. That is why I immediately condemned the action.
The Palestinian authorities said the approval showed U.S. negotiation efforts had failed before they had even begun, and Mr. Abbas called for the construction plan to be cancelled.
The decisions taken by Israel in the last 2 days, including the authorization of constructing new housing units in the Palestinian territories, damaged the efforts to start talks.
Israel's planned construction in East Jerusalem was an embarrassing setback for Biden after a day of warm meetings with senior Israeli officials. Israel apologized Wednesday for disrupting the visit of Vice President Joe Biden with its announcement of 1,600 new homes, but made clear it had no intention of derailing the latest U.S. push for Middle East peace. The United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon condemned the new settlement building plans and reiterated they are illegal under international law. Palestinian analysts believe Israel wants its own style of negotiations.
Israel is trying to convey a message to the international community that the negotiations must go ahead according to its own conditions and visions.
Under heavy U.S. pressure, Israel agreed in November to a temporary and partial pause in settlement activities. But in February, it was revealed that work had been continuing in many settlements, despite the promise of a pause.
Most of the Palestinian factions, including Fatah, which leads the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, have shown doubts about the indirect talks' success. Many here say that Biden's visit is solely aimed at proving the strength of the U.S.-Israeli bonds. Sari Al-Khalili, Press TV, Ramallah.
It is 4:15 in the morning here in Tehran. A quick reminder of our top stories this hour. A major Iraqi political alliance member expresses concern that the U.S. is trying to manipulate vote results in Iraq. The U.S. Treasury Department reports a budget deficit of $221 billion, the highest in 17 months. The European Parliament backs the findings of a UN investigator that highlights Israeli war crimes in Gaza.